Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hi there, it's Gina Gardner, and I'm really thrilled to be with my guest today, Angela T. Moore. Now, we met when I was a guest on her show, and I was so impressed and felt that she had so much to offer that I invited her to be a guest on mine. I'm going to read her bio because I don't want to miss anything out. Angela T. Moore is a business owner, integrated health expert, keynote speaker, radio show host, and advocate for personal responsibility, inspiring others to be the change they want in their lives, homes, workplaces, and communities, whilst equipping them with the tools to do so. For over two decades, Angela Moore has assisted clients in the attainment of their fitness and life goals and motivated countless others to live more powerful and healthier lives. So welcome, welcome, welcome. So pleased to have you here.
Now, it's my pleasure.
Thank you. Now, the people who are listening or watching this have no idea who you are. So tell us a bit about you and your journey of how you came to be here.
Okay. Well, I often and openly share my story. And my story is one of triumph, one of trauma. And really, it's the journey of trauma through trauma. And through triumph that has led me to what I do in my business, what I try to do in my radio show, what I do when I speak to different audiences. And that truly is that regardless of any situation or circumstance that you have encountered in your life, you have the power within you to overcome any obstacle and to really become the best and greatest person that you can become, as long as you're willing to do the work.
Very true. Yeah. So you've set up in business and your work is all about people being the best they can be. Now, talk us through how that works, because I know that you know, your string of accolades and qualifications is huge. So who's your ideal client to start with?
My ideal client truly is anyone that wants to become their best and greatest self and is willing to do the work to get there.
Okay. And how do you help them to be the best they can be? What are the things that you look at and help them develop?
Well, one of the things that I've developed, and really this has been pretty much in the past of probably 3 years of my business, one of the things that I recognize as a trainer is when I was training clients weren't really thanking me for the personal training services that I was providing. They were thanking me for the mental support that I provided. And also as a licensed therapist, you know, I recognized that there were a lot of mental obstacles that would come up, challenges that we all encounter throughout life, loss of loved ones, loss of opportunities, and quite honestly, even the loss of hope, having a goal that you set and not seeing that goal fulfilled and being able to, you know, to deal with that and get back up and go again. And what I noticed when I was working with clients is that I was part of that process, because the one thing that's really interesting about personal training, especially to the scale that I do it, I'm meeting with clients 2, 3, sometimes 5 days a week for minimally an hour. So I spend a lot of time with these individuals. And during that process, one of the things that I discovered was that as I was training these clients and they're sharing their hopes and their dreams, their aspirations, and also sharing their struggles that they're dealing with, that I would say that consistently across the board, everyone wants to be their best, but they don't necessarily know how to be the best. They yeah. may have been equipped with the tools, you know, because of maybe difficult relationships with their parents. They may have still been, may actually still be dealing with a lot of challenges because of past experiences. But one thing I recognize is that as I develop their strength in the gym and through conversations and through, like I would say, I don't want to, it's not a word, but kind of like as I'm pouring into someone, I would call it an in-pouring, when I'm pouring into someone and supporting them and I would say in a almost in a life-changing way, because as like I said, one thing with training, I am with this person for an hour, minimally an hour, multiple times a week. They're getting my undivided attention. And you have to think, how often do we get undivided attention from someone for an hour? Yes. And so
That so few people give themselves any time at all, let alone invest in having someone support them. And that seems to be one of the huge benefits of having a personal trainer or a coach of whatever sort, is that that's time dedicated to you, and that you can work on yourself, let go of past hurts and problems, but invest in yourself. And I think, you know, investing in yourself is the very best investment that you could ever make.
Mm-hmm. And that is essentially what happens. It's because they are investing in themselves.
Yeah.
Yes. And then over time, I'm actually indirectly providing you with the tools to become your best and greatest and even strongest self.
Yeah. So you say you work several times a week with somebody. Typically, how long a period would you work with people?
What's amazing, Gina, is some of my clients have been with me for like 11 years.
Good gracious, yes. That is a commitment from both sides, isn't it?
It is, very much so, very much so. And, you know, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, but if people wanted to see results and see those results in a fairly timely fashion, what would you think would be a reasonable time for them to commit in order to see great results?
I always strongly recommend a minimum of 12 weeks. Yeah. I do have those individuals that come in and they may only train for 4 weeks. And those are typically clients who are just kind of looking for a head start, and then they want to continue training on their own. But I will say predominantly probably 95% of my clientele, they're looking for a true life change. And then what they have discovered is that by scheduling in that time for themselves, scheduling that workout and making that commitment to themselves, that it helps everything else. It helps them in all other aspects of their life.
Now, you don't just do personal training in the sense of taking people off to the gym and or wherever and doing physical activity and working on their mental activity. I believe that a big part of what you do is around nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And actually what I do is an integrated health assessment, and I'll explain that. So during that integrated health assessment, I actually assess the client on their mental, nutritional, and physical health. When I first started training clients, I used to only focus on the physical aspect and some nutrition. You know, the understanding that they may have maybe a dietitian that they are meeting with. But what I discovered over time is that people weren't really looking for a diet plan that they would follow, and they wanted to know, like, how do I eat just healthy overall?
Yeah.
And then the mental component came in, as I recognized that sometimes there were those situations or circumstances that were so overwhelming that had I not been in, you know, been that significant part of their life, the workout would have been set aside.
Yes.
Yes. And so instead of eliminating the workout, now we're using it as a tool to help you deal through that and deal with that very negative situation that you're currently experiencing.
So in your experience, Is there a common pathway that people go through in terms of I want to succeed, and I'm prepared to invest my time and my resources in working with yourself? Do you see a common pattern in terms of how people improve? Is it just, is there a trajectory that is straightforward, or do you find that there are particular ways that people operate when they're making these changes?
It varies with each person, you know, quite honestly. It really does. And I can't say that, that there's a certain pattern, because, I have such a range of clientele. I have those that are retired individuals that have a lot of time to dedicate, to their training. And I have others that are trying to squeeze it in, into their very busy work schedule. What I will say is that what I have found is that generally, though, once the process starts, it's really, really important to continue that process and to keep people consistent and accountable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the accountability, I think that's a really interesting one, isn't it? If you look at the pattern of how many people, for example, join a gym on January the 1st, buy all the gear, go into the gym, get shown all of the equipment, go at it like a bull at a gate, can't move then for 3 weeks, and they never go back to the gym. Right. So, having somebody like yourself who will actually formulate a plan that is very specifically for that person, mm-hmm. work with them and then hold them accountable, seems to me a really positive way of moving forward, because you're not on your own, are you?
No. And what it creates is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And also a healthier mindset. And that's the thing I would say, and I guess I do have a kind of a better answer to your question. What I'm establishing is a healthier mindset.
Yeah.
Because quite honestly, you're not going to get healthy just by starting in January and working out like a crazy person for 3 weeks and then getting so sore, or working out for a couple of days and getting so sore that you can't move for 3 weeks and then completely quitting. Truly, it's understanding that you, from the day that you start, you're taking steps to become your best and greatest self, and that you're going to consistently eat well over a healthy diet. You're going to consistently exercise on a consistent basis. And then you're going to also be mindful of your mental health as well. And something I didn't add, one of the most effective ways to do that is by establishing first like a baseline, like where are you mentally right now? How are you dealing with stress? How are you dealing with current situations and circumstances? How have you dealt with past experiences? And how much anxiety do you have for your future?
So can you do that through a series of questions, or is there, for people who are listening, is there a way that you could give them some indication of how they could assess themselves and recognize whether they need to actually, everybody could be their better self, couldn't they? And mm-hmm. I think anybody could benefit from working with someone like yourself. But at the same time, there are many people who think, oh, I'll do it later, it'll be okay. What would you say to them are the signs that they should be very mindful of and really ought to be taking action?
Well, one of the things that I do, and this is actually, I do actually have them complete a very detailed questionnaire, and I ask a series of questions in those three components. So I ask nutrition questions, I ask mental health questions, and I ask physical health questions. But those questions are, just to give you an example, maybe like, what is your current relationship with food?
Right.
And also like, what type eater are you? Are you a binge eater? Do you go many hours between meals? Do you tend to overeat? Do you tend to undereat? And when you ask those questions, and as people ultimately answer those questions, they start to learn a lot about themselves. Mental health, I'll give you an example. Some of the questions may be, how do you typically, deal with situations? Do you have very high highs or very low lows? Or are you able to maintain a consistent mental state? And then physical health-wise, my questions may be, how consistent are you with your physical activity? Do you perform cardiovascular exercise numerous days a week?
Yeah.
Are you physically active throughout the day? Do you spend extended periods of time sitting? And so when clients answer those questions, pretty much by the time they get to the end of the questionnaire, they're like, oh my goodness, I really need your help more than I thought.
So again, thinking about the number of people who are listening to this who could be anywhere in the world, what for you, what are the benefits of having this holistic approach to health in terms of physical, mental health? Why is it so important?
Well, because everything, each component has an impact on the other. And all of them have determined on how healthy you are. So, for instance, if you're not physically active, then you increase your risk of chronic diseases. You also will increase the likelihood that you will feel stressed, that you will deal with depression, and that you will be in, unfortunately, a healthy, unhealthy mental state. And I'll just give you an example. For instance, if you're going throughout the day and you're consuming comfort foods, or foods that are going to produce, that are going to increase your neurotransmitters, your endorphins and your dopamine, and as well as your, your dopamine, your...
So you've got endorphins, dopamine, serotonin.
Yes, serotonin. I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay. So when you eat comfort food, it actually increases those hormones, which are your feel-good hormones. The thing is, though, but when you eat comfort foods, which are those typically those processed foods, those foods that are high in sugar and fat and things like that, it also, what will happen is you eat those foods, you'll feel good initially. But then those neurotransmitters are going to decrease, and then your cortisol, your stress hormone, is going to increase. And that's going to contribute to a very unhealthy feeling, an unhealthy mental state, and a feeling of not being in a not well-being.
So you get high initially, but then there's a drop-off and you start to feel rubbish. So presumably then you want to comfort eat again, so you get another high and another drop. Yes.
And then also too, we know that, when you exercise, it's going to produce those endorphins and those then also dopamine. It's going to make you feel good. And so if you're not doing those things and life in general is going to produce stress. I mean, just driving to work is a stressful time. Right now we're dealing with a very chaotic time, dealing with COVID-19. And so the stress of that. So imagine if we know that physical activity and eating well makes you feel good. Okay. And let's say you're not doing those things and life is still happening. You're still dealing with the stress and you're dealing with a lot of stress, especially in a time like this, but you're not counterbalancing that very negative stress with anything positive.
Yep.
It's not going to work. You're not going to be healthy. So to me, it's essential. There is no health if you're not healthy nutritionally, mentally, and physically.
I would agree with you. The one I would add, and certainly is the dimension I think that I've developed over the years, is that there's also a spiritual dimension in that if you're living your purpose, if you're living in line with your values, then your mental health is going to be better. And I think that's one of the things that many people perhaps don't think about. That they're doing a job that they hate because it brings in the money and they can buy the material things, but it's not satisfying that inner soul that wants to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I have often emphasized to people, because it's nice if you can go and do that job or find that, and live within your passion and work within your passion. Well, let's just say that because of situations and circumstance, you find yourself at a job that you don't want, that you don't like. You can still find purpose within that.
Absolutely. I would agree with you 100%. And also there's an opportunity outside your work to do things that fill you up. Mm-hmm. I would say to anybody, live your life with passion. And if you're doing it, what you consider a dead end job, then do it in the very best way you can, because ultimately it will make a difference to how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So what do you think your biggest life lesson has been?
You know, it's interesting that you asked me that. Years ago, I had one of what you say a life-changing situation, an aha moment, whatever you want to call it, a life lesson. I love to hear the spiritual teacher. Her name is Joyce Myers. And Joyce Meyer, actually, everybody always calls her Joyce Myers, but it's actually Joyce Meyer. So let me correct that. And it was at a time in my life, as I started earlier in the segment, I have experienced a lot of trauma. And at the time, at that particular time in my life, I was living as a victim. You know, I was not living my best life. I was letting life happen to me as opposed to making life happen. And I was making excuses for my behavior. And I was not behaving, truly, I was not behaving the best that I could. And, you know, there was a time when I could make excuses for that, but, you know, because I was young and I really couldn't control my situation. But then as I got older and I could create, I recognized that I had the power to kind of create the life that I wanted. I had to take responsibility for that. And one of the things that Joyce Meyer said was, you may have a reason for acting a certain way, behaving a certain way, but it doesn't give you a right. And that was truly life-changing for me because it took away the excuses, you know, and I realized that I was totally responsible for my behavior. I was totally responsible for my actions. And if I was going to create the life that I wanted to live, I was going to have to assume responsibility for that. And from that day forward, that's what I started to do.
I think that's an amazing life lesson. It's certainly one that is very much part of my work with people too. That, you know, we're the common denominator, aren't we? We take ourselves into our lives every moment of every day. And if we hand the responsibility over to other people to govern whether we're happy or sad or frustrated or angry, then we have to put up with what they give us. Whereas if we take radical responsibility for our own lives, the quality of our thinking in our lives, then we get to choose. And even when, you know, life is difficult, and you can't choose the situation, you can certainly choose the way in which you react to it.
Most definitely,
I
yes.
know from talking to you over the times we've had conversations that you've had more than most in terms of trauma, but you've changed that and you've recognized the strength that you have, and you're now using that to help other people. And
Yes.
I too am doing the same. And for me, that's such a powerful model that, you know, the challenge doesn't define us, does it?
No, it
It's
doesn't
what we
define you at
do.
all. It's what you do with it, most definitely. Yeah.
So how can our listeners and our viewers get hold of you?
Yes, they can contact me through my website at angelatmore.com, and that's AngelaTmore.com. And they can also visit my business website, which is thebodyprinciple.com, and that's thebodyprinciple.com.
And we'll make sure that's in the show notes. Thank you very much. And I believe that you are that you're happy to make an offer to our listeners and our viewers.
Yes, and that would be a complete, comprehensive, integrated health assessment. So I would love to help you establish where you are mentally, nutritionally, and physically so that you could become your best and greatest self.
Brilliant. And how do they access that? Through your website?
Yes, they would contact me, and then I would actually arrange a time to send them the paperwork, and then we would do a follow-up so that I can be able to talk with them personally, one-on-one.
That's absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. Thank you
Thank
very much for the
you.
opportunity.
Thank you. Don't go away, folks, because we'll be back after the break for a genuine chat. I look forward to seeing you there. Thanks a lot.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com, or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello there, and welcome back. It's Gina Gardner here, and if you're a regular listener to Thriving Not Surviving, you'll know that the second part of the program is myself and Rachel Davidson, both number one international best-selling authors. Rachel is a spiritual novelist, and my books are all about helping yourself. We're going to talk about moving into a higher vibration. There's a lot of talk, isn't there, about the new era and the new norm and how we as people make the best of that. And I want us to explore today, for me, the whole business of the evolution of being our best selves. It's my belief that as we go through life, it's a learning opportunity. It's an opportunity to see each challenge, each life stage is an opportunity to learn and to grow, and not just to learn intellectually, but to learn spiritually and to understand that in order to be our best selves, it's about learning to rise above fear and above the negative emotions, but at the same time acknowledge those, not bury them. But in doing so, learn to recognize that this is a journey. And we have the opportunity to continue to learn, to continue to grow, and to expand our horizons. We have limitless possibilities within us. But just like an acorn, it stays within its hard little shell unless it's planted and it gets the opportunity to have water and to be looked after. So, higher vibrations. For some people, they're pink and fluffy, and for other people, it's very much what they believe and how they operate within life. What's your view, Rachel?
Well, I think if you talk about it from an energetic body point of view, then your higher vibrations are about the connection to spirit, and that would involve your working on yourself to open up all of the chakras. And obviously, the colours as you head upwards do change,
So you've got red and orange at the base, and you have the indigos at the top. I can't remember what the colour is for star chakra. I think it's either violet or indigo. I always get the two mixed up. And as an ex-interior designer, that's shocking, obviously. But I think, you know, higher vibrations is this aspiration to always move upwards and to always act with a sense of love and an intention for love. But, and this is what I've been exploring in the third book, actually, is a lot of people assume that when you talk about love, you're talking about stardust and sprinkles and you know,
fluffy
and nice. And I'm not sure. I'm interested to explore in my life the all aspects of love and how it manifests and how actually love can often come in what might initially feel like quite a threatening. I was going to say almost oppressive, but only to invoke that sense of awe. And certainly if you read some religious scripts, when characters are presented with God or whatever the higher being is, archangels, so on and so forth, they're not nice, easy creatures. They come with a sense of threat about them. And that's really interesting to me, because when you reach for your higher self, sometimes that can involve actually not just picking up a feather, but picking up a sword. So I think the key difference is, you know, A, the detail that's around you, and B, the intention that's within your heart. I wrote a blog about it the other day where I used the line, you know, to be disagreeable can often be the kindest thing you can do for yourself. And of course, the word disagreeable needs explaining, in the sense that sometimes the best thing to do to raise to your higher vibrations is to come across as disagreeable to others, to say no or to say yes to something else. Yeah, it can only be defined by yourself. And the path, I think, to my higher self is, am I doing this out of envy or spite or anger just because of a reaction, or am I doing it because of a deep conviction that that this thing will be a change for the better? So I think when we talk about higher vibrations, reaching his higher self, I think it's as always, it's never simple. It's always complex. That's my view.
It's interesting, isn't it? And there's a lot to unpick. Love. Let's get a real sense of love. Well, my sense of love. There's nothing pink and fluffy about loving somebody unconditionally, whether that's yourself, and that has to be the starting point. For me, when you love unconditionally, it's about wanting the best from that person and the best for that person. So if you put it into the context of a parent, you know, being loving doesn't mean that you give in to your children all the time. Being loving is sometimes that you have to say, I believe that this isn't right for you, so no, you can't do it. Or I don't believe that's your best and I expect more from you. Mm. Unconditional love for me, whether it's for a parent or it's as a teacher, and as you know, that's my background, it is about holding the line, if you like, and saying, I want the best from you and for you, and I'm not prepared to accept anything less. Mm. And I think there are times when love can feel contentious, because I can, you know, think how many parents who hear the words from their children, but everybody else can. You know, why won't you let me? You're being mean. But actually, as a loving parent, you're saying, other parents may not, but actually I'm doing this because I love you and because I want the best for you. But I think I'd like to put it in the context of not other people demonstrating or experiencing love, but actually the love that we have for ourselves and how we utilize that in that journey we call life. Because it's so easy, isn't it, to hand the responsibility of being loved and being loving to other people, when in reality, it's my view that the biggest part of our journey is about learning to love and appreciate who we are, to step into our genuine power. And people have heard this before. Now, I talk a lot about stepping into our genuine power, which is recognizing that we do have flaws and there's always areas for development and improvement, but that we're not broken to start with, that ultimately we are a work in progress. And I'm, you know, how often do I work with clients who are really critical of themselves because they're not perfect at something? And recognizing that perfection is something to strive for, and it's very much in the eye of the beholder. But rarely, if ever, do people start an act, and it's usually to do with an activity rather than how they're being. But rarely do we start an activity as an expert. You know, we have to develop that skill. Yeah. And I think that's also true of developing that relationship with ourselves, which is based on loving who we are.
Yeah. There's a good analogy, isn't there, of a dog begging for some chocolate, which of course is highly poisonous.
Yes.
And the owner saying, no, I know you want this chocolate, but no, you're not going to get it.
Yes.
And it's a metaphor for sort of, you know, we all think that what we want is what we want, and when we get it, we'll be happy. But we don't understand the bigger concepts, the bigger mysteries. And that's one of the frustrations of this human experience, is you never really know what is, why things are happening. And this is where this, you know, topics of faith and trust come in as well. But it is true that often we are the dog looking up and saying, I really want that chocolate. And the universe is saying, that, you know, no, that will kill you. What, I'm not going to give you that. This is me being loving. I'm not going to give you that. And it's very, very difficult to be the dog.
Yes.
You don't understand the concept of chocolate killing you.
But it's also that issue of, you know, hindsight's the only wonderful exact science, isn't it? When often when you look back to a situation, and you know, people who know my story will know that I've had some incredibly challenging times, learned to walk twice as an adult. Uh-huh. And yet if I look back at that, what I remember is not the day-by-day struggle and pain, and there was a lot of that, but what I look back and I recognize is that there were huge gifts.
Yeah.
And I think the perspective of time gives us greater understanding, and also gives us the opportunity to recognize that actually, whilst it was a very difficult time, there are huge growths and gifts that come from those difficult times.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of Art Geiser, and I studied energetic NLP with Art Geiser. Mm-hmm. And it's very well worth looking at if you go onto his website. He always talked about his belief of the day, because his view was that as he evolved and as he grew and learnt more, that thought, that belief about the world and about where things were and how things were operating was constantly shifting as more information and more enlightenment came along. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really healthy way to be. I think people who believe this is it, this is the way, this is the thing, mm-hmm. are in danger of missing the point. And for me, that's one of the big dangers of people who have fundamental views about almost anything, is that there's no room for maneuver. I'm right, and that makes everybody else wrong, and that keeps you stuck in that lower vibration, whereas when you are open and curious about what's going on, and recognize that things are shifting and moving and evolving all the time, that you can start to grow.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, actually, because it's all very well sort of saying, oh, you know, aim for your higher vibrations. And then in the moment you're thinking, what? how do I, you know, and you sort of force things like, I will be positive about this. And I will think this about this person. I will. And your emotions are saying, no, you won't. This is the truth of it. But I think that the key to finding your higher vibrations is to get quiet and to listen to yourself. And again, this is easily said, but this is not easily done. Because
we live in a very, very noisy world, don't we?
Yeah, and we are all trained in this modern Western world to just keep moving. And we're all told that momentum, no matter what is where it's at. And sometimes that's true and sometimes it's not. I always think that if I have a serious problem of sort of understanding where my higher path, so to speak, resides, then curiosity and wonder are the two best questions to sort of ask myself. Where is my curiosity lying at the moment? What am I interested in knowing? And just wandering down and meandering, sometimes on the face of it, useless path. But again, as you say, you look back in hindsight and you see what learning you got from it, even if you went down the cul-de-sac and reversed back up it. And also that question of I wonder, without any weight and attachment of an outcome or an action point or a plan or, you know, this, that and the other. I can remember when I was in my early 20s listening to some man in the office who was generally thought of as a bit of a joke in the office for lots of reasons, but he was, you know, slightly sort of on the, oh, here he goes again. And he was talking about his five-year plan and describing how he'd micromanaged his life for the next 5 years. I can remember feeling utter horror at the idea of having to do that back in my 20s. And there have been times when I have felt pressured to be more of that kind of person. And I'm not sure that it works for some things, but to have it as an absolute, I've made my 5-year plan, I'm going to do it. I think, I mean, maybe he was a higher being and he absolutely could read the future accurately and knew exactly his path, but I doubt it. I sincerely doubt it. And I think the wonder and the curiosity is what leads you to your truth, your where you're meant to be. And if you are trying to squeeze too much of the juice out of that, then you'll end up in places where it's sort of okay, but it's probably not really where you're meant to be. It's the universe saying, I really didn't want to give you that chocolate, but you insisted.
I think there's a number of things I'd like to sort of bring up in response to that. The first is that I think the curiosity and the awe and wonder are very much how we are as very young children.
Yeah.
There is no judgment. There is just that amazing, you look at a very small child when it picks up a leaf or it sees a snail or there is that sense of, wow, isn't that amazing? Mm. And I think we lose sight of that in the busyness. Mm. And sometimes, I mean, for me, nature and my garden, just looking at the clouds, if I take the time to be in the moment, I can recapture that awe and wonder of, isn't it amazing? You see a beautiful tree or you see just something of natural beauty. Mm. That for me, that's a very quick way into that curiosity and that awe and wonder of a small child.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is I was listening this week to some of the Abraham and Esther Hicks stuff, mm-hmm. which talks about in order for us to manifest in the future, it's dependent upon our thinking and our energetic placement, if you like, and that's my words, not theirs, of the now. Mm-hmm. And that if we're always focusing on what we haven't got and mm-hmm. what's not working, that continues because the energy behind that focus on the things we don't want, and many people do that at a significant proportion of their thinking day. Mm-hmm. And this is about having the courage to step outside that sense of lack and to really focus on being in that energetic place where you have the emotional attachment, the emotional outcome of being in that better place, being in that place, forward place.
Yeah,
and that can be really difficult, particularly if you're worried about money or about your job. And I know this has been a really challenging year for very many people. And saying, you know, be in the vibration of, you know, abundance and where you want to be when you're worried about whether you're going to be able to pay your rent or your mortgage and have enough food on the table. Mm-hmm. It's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is where why the religions structured and spirituality at large will talk about how important faith is.
Yeah,
it is a leap into the unknown and a trust in mechanisms and ideologies that will provide.
Yes, it is. So for me, I think that, you know, having an understanding that, you know, we as human beings have choices on a moment by moment basis.
Yeah.
And those choices can be that we will focus on lack, that we will focus on the things in life that we don't like, or we can focus on being grateful. Because for most of us, certainly if people are watching this, the likelihood is that they live in an abundant life in comparison to many people on this earth. The very nature of the fact that they have access to electricity and to the internet means that they are part of the favoured group of humanity that have those things available to them. But it's easy to say it's all right for you. What about the other person? In that moment, that person may be feeling worried, frightened, fed up, depressed. And so I think for me that learning to be in the higher vibration is to acknowledge that you are in that negative place and to accept that that's where you are in this moment, but to recognize it's your choice whether you stay there. Hmm. And that in recognizing that you have that choice and switching from I am in a place of lack, I'm in a place of negativity, in that recognition that you have the choice, you automatically start to raise your vibrations. Now, if you choose to stay stuck, then of course that momentary opportunity to raise your vibrations gets lost, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But in that choice that I'm going to choose to look, to see myself as someone who, this is transitory, and I'm going to move from this to a better situation, to a better emotion. In that transition, there's already a gear shift. It's almost as if you're, you know, the car is idling and you've got the handbrake on. Hmm. In that shift, what you're doing is you're removing the handbrake. Now, you don't go anywhere unless you start to put your foot on the gas. Yeah. And start to accelerate out of that place. But what it does do in that moment of choice is it gives the opportunity for you, if you carry on with the metaphor, for the engine to pull away. If you give some energy, some fuel, some gas to moving into that higher vibration of a place of recognizing that we are lucky, that we have opportunities, that we can choose to stay stuck, or to move into a better frame of mind, into a better situation.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is it's in that moment where I think the momentum is helpful.
Yeah.
Because once you've actually put your foot on the gas, it's a question of where are you going to choose to go?
Yeah.
Are you going to choose to look backwards and worry about what went on in the past? Are you going to choose to be anxious about the future? Or are you going to choose to enjoy that moment and make the most of that moment and then the next and then the next and then the next?
Yeah.
Now, these words sound really easy, don't they? But when you're in the middle of the mire, it's quite difficult to even find the handbrake, let alone recognize that you have a choice. But then that's the purpose of conversations like this, is to raise people's awareness that actually you know what, even if life is really, really tough, you have the choice.
That's the point about our experiences, that we we all have free will and choice. Excuse me. But having free will and choice is a massive responsibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes it would feel better if somebody else was just making the choices for us, but then you're not really anything other than a doll.
Well, you have to,
even though you would love to just chuck it over and have it happen, the act is in the doing it yourself. that's the growth. That's what's required of us when we land on this planet. Yeah,
I think so. And I think as we move forward, my hope is that as we move out of all of the challenges of 2020 and the pandemic and the political unrest and all of the things that we can see going on around the world, is that each of us has the opportunity to make our choices, little choices moment by moment, that we can make a difference to ourselves and our own lives and to the lives of others. Mm. And it doesn't have to be on the macro scale. You know, those small thoughts, emotions and actions on a moment by moment basis, in terms of how we operate, how we interact with one another, with the environment, can and do make an enormous difference.
And also, obviously, we're complex beings, and we can hold two states of being in our hearts and minds at once. It is possible to feel really depressed and fed up about life, but still to have some curiosity. And I think sometimes we often forget that's okay to be as potentially conflicted within ourselves as that. We buy the line that we should just have one vision and just be heading towards it like a robot, where in actual fact we are much more chaotic. And I think, again, coming to an acceptance of your own internal chaos, to use a dramatic word, but, you know, it can feel like that sometimes, and certainly in my head, then that itself is a calmer. That in itself will help bring order and sort things out and so on. So, you know, higher self has to involve lower self. You can't have one without the other. The higher you go, the deeper you go. This is all about the balance in the universe. So, but gratitude, curiosity, and wonder will always, and love, those four things will always lead you to some kind of evolved situation.
I think very often we fear confusion. And I think it's out of the chaos and the confusion that often the biggest learnings come. And sometimes it's being courageous enough to sit with that confusion, that chaos, long enough to allow things to start to order themselves in a way that we can understand. And then you get that aha moment. Oh, that's what it was about. That's the lesson. That's what I needed to take on board in order to be able to move forward.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, you know, that if you recognize it within yourself that you are learning to love, to be curious, to hold that yourself accountable, but in a loving way, then you are well placed for this journey we call life. You are well placed to be able to increase your vibration, to increase your capacity to love even more, to be exacting in your expression of love, that it's not indulgent. It is about expecting the best for you and the best from you. And in doing that, you're a model to other people. And I hope together that we are going to make a profound difference, and we'll see more tolerance, more people working together. You know, collaboration and togetherness, and recognizing the value of one another rather than hate and division that we've seen so much evidence of. Yes. So I'd like to invite you all to go and have a look at Rachel's books. They're on Amazon, The Point of Him, The Truth of Her, and the Truth of Me, and The Hope of Us, which by now I hope is going to be either published or very close to publishing. They're all available on Amazon. and also on the website. You'll find my books on Amazon. Please go to the website genuinely-you.com and enlightenedleadership.co. If you're interested in leadership for life, leading yourself, leading others, then please go to enlightenedleadership.co, arrange a call, and I'll look forward to speaking to you. We'll see you in a fortnight. Please take care. Be loving to yourself and others. We'll see you then. Bye-bye now.